You keep saying you got something for me.
Hello.
Something
Hello,
you
nice
call
to welcome you to episode 74 of Extra Theatres, starring
Harry Potter
and Wendy today.
Peter Pan.
In the bottomless contempt of death.
And I'm Marvin.
Hi, Marvin.
Where's Wonder Dog?
We got Gleek the Space Monkey, though.
I think I'm in the seventh circle of hell.
The ninth gate is finally open. Have you been having too much bubbly, Kevin?
Perhaps.
It's your English friend again.
My English friend Arthur?
That would be the one.
The movie that only you have seen, directed by Jason Weiner, starring Alan Mirren, Russell Brand, Jennifer Garner, Louise Guzman, Geraldine James, Nick Nolte, Greta Gerwig, Evander Holyfield, the boxer.
He's in it.
And Robert Klohessy. Next thing you know, then we might taste it in these.
Really?
Get out.
No way. Hope he doesn't have a hangover.
I hope not. Where is he?
I got a question for you. Do you remember Greta Gerwig?
No.
Greenberg.
Yes.
She's right. The girl with Greenberg that Ben Stiller likes.
Oh.
Hooks up with. It's a horrible movie.
Oh, you brought back the bad memories for
okay.
Kevin.
Okay. I thought we were going to do Arthur 2 after. We're going to do that first. That's fine.
No, we're doing the new one.
I know. I'm ready.
Whatever.
I got it. I'm going to go into it. It's basically they took Arthur 1 and Arthur 2 and made a movie with Russell Brand. And it's exactly, almost shot, for parts of it, is number one. Like, the first 20 minutes of this movie, it's exactly the same 20 minutes as number one. He's in the bathtub, the same kind of things. I'm kind of like, I've seen this movie.
Now, what do you think of Helen Mirren compared to John Gielgud?
They're both excellent. And there's no issues with me. I had no problems with the Helen Mirren character. But again, they're, like, saying the same lines.
Really?
Like, I'm not saying they're exactly the same, but it's so similar. I was kind of like, I've seen this movie. I don't want to see this movie again. Like, obviously, there's a little bit different.
So, it was an off-puttingly faithful remake.
It was a piece of crap. I couldn't recommend this.
Because he's not drunk.
No. Right? Well, he does. He does drink.
Is he an alcoholic?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Everything's almost exactly the same, just that they update the things he has to do. Like, again, they set him up with Jennifer Gardner's character, but now she works for, I think, Arthur's mother. You know what I mean? So they change little things like that, but there's not enough of a change in this movie. You've seen one and two. You don't need to see this.
So what you're saying is the larger issue is why did this movie need to exist?
It doesn't need to exist. That's my biggest issue. These remakes suck. I mean, Arthur goes through the same period, and Jennifer Connelly actually is a money-grubbing whore because she needs to marry Arthur to run the company. And she's pissed he has no interest in it. And, of course, Arthur comes, turns, and figures it all out and, you know, wins at the end and beats Jennifer Garner.
And he falls in love with a magical indie movie pixie girl?
That's basically it, yeah.
Even though falling in love with an alcoholic is a recipe for heartbreak and despair.
Oh, but he closed down Union Station and had dinner there and shut down all the trains and everything.
He's an alcoholic with a pocketbook.
That's it. Actually, the one was funny, amusing scene when he gets out of... He rides around the Batmobile with Louise Guzman right at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, okay, that'd be cool.
And you see fat Louise Guzman can't fit in the Robin costume. So it's kind of funny. And you see the cops going, they go, hello, Arthur. What? I'm Batman. You don't know who I am. And that was kind of mildly amusing, but that was about it for me. I give this a complete thumbs down.
All right, well, good. I won't see it on your recommendation.
Do not see this movie.
Anybody else have any questions for him? I don't want to probe him, but...
Should we burn all copies of this movie and douse them with holy water?
Oh, there's other things I'd get first, Greenberg.
Okay.
It seems like there's a trend here with Greta Gerwig.
Yeah. Okay. Well, she's just a C-list actor that's cheap.
Well, that's a version of the film I don't want to see. What about Barney's version, directed by Richard J. Lewis? Do you like my separators?
I do.
Paul Giamatti, Rosamund Pike, Paul Gross, Adam Egoyan. Adam Egoyan. Yeah. Scott Speedman. Is a superhero, I imagine. Mark Addy. Clint Bennett. Was that really your name, Clint?
Clay.
Clay?
Clay. It's a guy.
Rachel Lefevre. Jake Hoffman. Dustin Hoffman. Are they related?
They are.
Minnie Driver. Macha Brennan. Saul Rubinick. Maury Chaykin before he died. He even had a Y in his name while he was making the movie, but not on the list. David Cronenberg, the famous director. Bruce Greenwood. Demi Arcand. Lots of Canadian directors in this movie. And on that note, I'm really bored.
I have not seen the movie, but I have read the book. I loved the book. But I have no idea how, like, this book is basically a man rambling on at great length, very entertainingly, about his life and his three unsuccessful marriages. And but when I heard they were going to make a movie out of this, I was like, how? And so what I'm curious to find out is, what did they do right and what did they do wrong? And is the result just a complete steaming pile of poop on the memory of Mordecai Richler?
No, it is not. It is a hugely successful, I would say, adaptation of the book. I went into it not expecting a whole lot in the sense of the book to me was just okay. So I kind of went in just, you know, it'll be an okay movie, but it blew me away. Definitely one of my favorite movies of last year. Definitely.
I mean, because Paul Giamatti, like, I mean, casting him gave me faith that they were going to do this seriously.
It was a great choice. He's in virtually every scene of the movie. He ages, as you know, about in the course of the book, his life story. He ages, and they do it, I think, incredibly well. And in one of the last scenes where he's very aged and sort of in that dementia, Alzheimer's phase of life, and he needs his son to help him light his cigar, it brings a tear to your eye. It's so poignant.
So talk to me about Dustin Hoffman playing Mr. Panofsky Sr., the Jewish cop.
The Jewish cop. He is definitely a character. You know, has to be the life of the party, has to be the star in the room. And I think Barney has always sort of had to walk in his shadows, you know, with such a large...
Larger than life,
exactly. And I think, you know, their relationship as a result is a little bit strained. And you see that in certain episodes as the movie goes on. Do you not agree? I'm getting a shaking head over there.
No, no, I'm agreeing with you. I'm thinking about what you're saying.
Oh.
Are you finished?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I know I'm going to get blasted back. I didn't love this movie.
Oh! Wait.
I have reasons.
Okay, so, like, where does this fit on the meter? Like, is this something that you absolutely hate, bury it next
to
you?
No, I think it's a solid movie. I don't want to bury this movie in any way. I think it's solid. It's not. I have a lot of issues with the pacing. I find it very, very slow. I find it's very character driven.
The book is a character study.
Having not read the book, I think you could probably. I can understand where that comes from.
It's a very character driven book. I find his wives drive this movie.
Well, that's just it. The book is largely like there's a prologue and an epilogue in the book, and then the movie is basically split up into his three marriages. The second one referred to entertainingly as simply the second Mrs. Panofsky.
Well, the movie does do that. I find the movie focuses on the marriages very well, and the transition scenes I like a lot. I just find he doesn't really interest me, Panofsky. I like his wives. His wives I find very amusing. Do you know what I mean? I like the Mimi Driver character. I liked the first wife. I love that first scene. The first opening scene when he finds out that the black guy screwed his wife for not him, wasn't his kid, and he bunches him. I like that scene. I enjoyed that scene, and I enjoyed the third act. The second act, I really thought was slow. The Mimi Driver character, I felt bad for because they really had nothing to work with there. I mean, I think the book, if they're telling me the chapter's called Mrs. Panofsky the second,
yeah,
there's really nothing to that character,
because
get that.
In the book, he never Barney narrates the book. Like, all we know is during the 90% of the book, all we see is what Barney sees and what Barney tells us as the readers. And the first wife is, you know, the Sylvia Plath-esque feminist. The second wife is only referred to as the second Mrs. Pinowski. We never find out any of her first name.
And then, you know why? Because it doesn't really matter. She married him for the lifestyle he gave her, for the money. So she's that very vapid kind of Jewish princess. You know, like, that's really what she aspired to, and that's what she succeeds at. So her character, I think she got the accent right. I think she really, you know, got that Brooklyn Bronx kind of whatever it
tough rich girl.
Yeah. City girl, I think she got it, and I believe Minnie Driver won the Gemini Award for this role.
So talk to me about the actress who plays Miriam, the love of Barney's life.
Rosamund Pike is a very understated character. Like, I mean, she's simple but strong, and is truly the love of his life. And as you know, their relationship goes on and she kind of sees a little bit more into who he really is. She finds some things that are not the most appealing traits. And when she finds out that he has, you know,
been untrue,
and then sort of as the story progresses, you know, she is not tolerant of it, maybe the way other people in his life have been tolerant of his behavior.
Now, in the book, without spoiling anything, they do give a reason for why she reacts so violently to his infidelity. And they link it back to an incident in her childhood. And it's in, literally, it sounds vapid when I say it, but it's like her father constantly cheated on her mother, and when she found that her man is exactly the same, she just snaps, like she just cuts them off entirely.
I mean, if it was there, it was certainly not a very large part of the story. Like, it might have been in passing, but I don't have a clear recollection of that.
Which is why I ask you this, because it's a movie based on a great book. And as with all books, especially books told almost exclusively in the first person, it's always interesting to see the choices they make.
Right.
And how successful those choices are.
I think, you know, from the screenwriting of this to the directing, I think it was a complete solid effort. And I have to say that, again, you know, Paul Giamatti is in almost every scene. And when you have a character, you know, it is Barney's story, so clearly he needs to be in every scene. But he clearly has a great handle on who Barney is and how he's going to be presented, and really has the quirkiness about him, has the diction of him. So I was thoroughly, thoroughly impressed. Bob?
Okay, now I understand that you read the book and you like the book and you like the movie. Simon, however, didn't like the movie as much.
I thought it was okay. I didn't love
okay.
it.
Did you read the book?
No.
Okay.
Do you want to read the book?
No.
Do you have a book?
No.
Oh, but and then I could. I wouldn't. I don't think I'd have an issue reading the book. I like Mordecai Richard's work. I've heard of other stuff. Yeah.
Who?
Mordecai Richard? Yeah.
Okay.
It sounds like Richard. Richard Little.
Me not having read the book, but I've seen the movie. I really enjoyed it. Me.
Did you wear clothes when you were watching it?
Yes, I did. I did. So we watched it. We really liked it. The theater was... not slightly empty. There was a lot of people in it, so they must have enjoyed it.
Well, they heard you got a big pocket of popcorn and you were going to share, so they were all excited.
Well, then they'd be wrong because I left it for myself.
Oh, well, another that is a theater.
You know what, you get the bucket with the
I didn't get the bucket.
You just lift it right over your head and put your head right in the popcorn.
Sorry.
Moving on, I'm gonna have to agree with Karen rather than you, because
that's okay.
It was great.
I'm comfortable. Moving on to something Karen might have been on the weekend, a bridesmaid.
Were you a bridesmaid on the weekend, Karen?
I was not a bridesmaid. I was a wedding guest.
Not close enough. Cover it.
Never a bridesmaid, always a guest.
I have been a bridesmaid, but not this time. Is that good enough? I didn't have to wear a frou-frou dress. Is that good?
No frou-frou.
No frou-frou.
That's always a good thing.
Are there pictures of you in this frou-frou dress?
I didn't wear a frou-frou dress.
No, last time you wore the frou-frou dress.
I didn't have to wear a frou-frou dress in that wedding party either.
Oh, this sucks. Deb?
Well, all right, bridesmaids.
Is anybody trying to use their head as a tripod?
Not this weekend,
okay.
No.
That would be in 62 days.
Right, put away the tripod. It's directed by Paul Feig. Stars Kristen Wiig, Maya Rudolph, Jessica St. Clair, Terry Crews, Tom Mee, Michael Hitchcock, Callie Hawk, Jill Clayburgh, somebody on the staple. Rose Byrne, Melissa McCarthy, Ellie Kemper, Wendy McLennan, Kobe, and Matt Lucas, and Hugo Nibby.
Oh my goodness. I just have to say, I really enjoyed this movie, but just before we even start reviewing it, one of the great things about this movie was how completely the print and television campaign saved all the amazing things about the movie. So often, trailers spoil everything. Or the poster gives it all away.
Yes.
To look at, based on the posters, this looked like they were setting it up to be a female version of The Hangover.
I just want to know how you feel about porn movies, because I don't watch porn trailers, and obviously you have watched some kind of trailers. So do the porn trailers that you've seen in porn posters give away the plot of the movie?
Our train derailed. I apologize to our listeners.
Wow. Listeners.
It's just a question.
There are trailers for
porn movies? I don't know. Maybe Kevin would know a better answer to that.
I can't answer that question. There are trailers for porn movies, yes.
Oh, there we go. Right. I'm now enlightened.
Back to Bridesmaids.
Back to Bridesmaids.
All right.
So what does that have to do with Bridesmaids?
Nothing. Just said that she was discussing trailers. I like to derail our show, so I just wanted to go off topic.
All right. Sorry, Zach.
Our one listener.
Our one and only fan.
We have more. He's the only one that emailed me.
Yes, but he's Zach Beebe, our only fan, who isn't one of your imaginary friends.
Well, I have many.
Imaginary friends.
And yeah. They almost surprisingly look like you, Deb, so it's kind of weird. Are you really here?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps I'm one of these autonomous...
Are
you in the 19th? Somewhere. Okay, goodbye
to my face. Please.
All right, but this movie was very much advertised as being the female Hangover.
Very raucous.
Yes, and there was plenty of that in the movie, but what really threw me was how how much about how women are friends this movie is about. It's all very natural humor, but it grows out of things that you don't really see much of in big screen comedies.
It had humor, it had poignancy, and... You know, I gotta say, brought a little tear in my eye at a point. I'm sure you, maybe not you, Bob, I'm sure Deb had a little moment of tear.
I openly wept.
You openly wept? Oh, I'm very glad to
hear
that.
Well, he's a big Wilson Phillips fan. We saw them reuniting at the end of the movie. He just couldn't handle it.
Oh, see, Bob, you would like this movie. They're singing and dancing.
Yes.
I do want to see the movie.
Okay.
And I'll never look at a bridal store the same way again.
No. Can I just say Melissa McCarthy steals the movie?
She deserves some kind of Oscar for this because I have never seen an actor just explode out of an ensemble. Like this.
Explode is the operative word in this movie.
Well, for one particular scene, yes.
Kevin, did you see this movie?
I did see the movie.
And how did you feel in the Miracle
Spot? I thought it was amazing. I thought it was kind of gross in parts. I laughed, I cried. I did the whole thing. I actually found this to be a bit depressing, this movie. Because Kristen Wiig's character, really, like, she gets down to the bottom in this movie. She really does not have a nice life.
She doesn't, but the film works for that. That's why we like this film, because those funny scenes are needed. When you get them, I don't care if you guys, I want to discuss the wedding dress scene. I couldn't stop laughing. I cried. Physically, tears were pouring.
The bridal store scene?
That's exactly the scene I want to discuss.
Oh my God. Or the scene, although I have to say, just in the other bridal dress scene where after the rich snooty girl has dragged the bride off to Paris to have a couture dress, and we discover that it is absolutely horrible.
I want to know, my favorite line, because I've watched this very recently, was, and I mean, I broke up laughing. First time I killed myself, and the guy sits there when the person's sons goes, are they playing tennis or doing a tampon commercial? Game over for me right there. As a guy, I was crying.
No, the scene where I just about broke down was at the bridal shower, where we find the evil snooty bridesmaid has stolen our heroine's idea for a French-themed bachelorette party. And then Kristen Wiig just loses it. And she starts destroying all the decorations, including the giant frickin' cookie. And you see her, like, throwing it on the ground and breaking it and stomping it.
That's the one scene I had issues with, actually.
Yeah.
I thought it went on too long.
No, it worked for me because I could feel her anger.
I don't think we needed that long.
This is one of those rare movies that actually allows a mixed audience, men and women, to see how women view each other in friendship.
Well,
and competition is actually one of the ugly, ugly truths about where two women are mutually friends with a third person, but not friends themselves.
Yes.
There's a lot of truth in this movie.
There is, indeed.
It's blown up to, like, funhouse proportions, but it's there.
Simon?
I have a question. They know that scene. They set that scene up beautifully. After the Kristen Wiig wigs out, pun intended, and they go, does anybody else say it? Melissa McCarthy goes, oh, yeah, I took two puppies.
Yes.
And you see her driving off, and she got sick. I was on the floor.
That might have been a bit excessive.
No, it
wasn't. No, it worked.
But it's also the little things about this movie that I love. Like the scene where Kristen Wiig is driving onto the estate where the snooty bridesmaids live. And it's this giant house. But as she drives through the gates, there's a little sign that says, you know, the place has a name, like I'll call it, you know, Bitch Acres. Established 2008. I loved that because it undercut the whole pretension of, like, this French chateau like Milwaukee or wherever it was in the car.
I'm going to talk about this one more time. Melissa McCarthy on the plane. You're an air marshal. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. I was crying when they started talking about the gun and the placement of the gun. I couldn't stop laughing. I'm like, this woman steals this movie. Mm-hmm. And the other woman going, yeah, my husband doesn't kiss me. He just wants to have sex all the time. And I died at times.
Do you know that was her real husband?
No.
McCarthy's real husband.
I did not.
The air marshal.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Probably
why
he wasn't cracking up these guys.
I think this movie is fantastic. I give it a solid 4 because I had a little problem with the Kristen Wiig. She brings me down too many times, but I enjoyed everything.
But you know, at the end of the movie, though, she's a better person, and that's why it's actually okay.
Well, it's real. Like you say, that degree of competition with women in friendship is really delved into, like I've seen in no other movie, really. And it's sort of, again, you have that reminiscence, you know, you bring back Wilson Phillips, you've got the 80s, you know, where...
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
One more day.
Oh my God, it's karaoke again.
Come on, I sang along with the whole song. I remember that song.
You know, like, it was that whole kind of thing, you know, because Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph, they have a history. They have, you know, all that stuff behind them. Oh, you want to sing, Bob? I'm sorry, here's the mic.
I don't want to sing.
I want to hear what Bob thinks about this.
He didn't see it.
I haven't seen it. Yes, I plan on seeing it.
Why didn't you see it?
He was busy.
You don't have to sing.
He was busy.
We're trying to get the pop baseball. We don't have to see baseball.
Baby.
You don't have the baseball. He likes baseball. He likes autographs. He didn't have time. Fair enough.
I watched one movie till 3 in the morning trying to get it finished before this.
That's fantastic. Speaking of disputes, Bob, how was Romeo and Juliet for you? Directed by
Romeo and Juliet.
Kelly Asbury.
That sounds about right.
Starring the voice Michael Caine, James McAvoy, Emily Blunt, Maggie Smith, Jim Cummings, Jason Statham,
awesome.
Matt Lucas, and Ozzy.
We're all going to kill us, man.
Yeah, wrong movie.
Wrong movie.
Jason Statham is in this?
Yes!
The same Jason Statham who's Lingerie model Rosie Huntington-Whiteley is stinking up screens in Transformers 3. Is it
yes!
Jason Statham, who makes a career out of being incredibly scary while driving at high speeds?
Yes!
Oh my god, I may have to see this.
Bob, yes! What do you think?
Well,
loved it. Loved it?
Loved
the plot, Bob.
What?
Remember the plot?
No.
Okay.
But it's basically like Romeo and Juliet, but with those little gnomey things. They're the two different neighbors are fighting, and even the neighbors themselves who own the gnomes are fighting. They're right beside each other.
That was funny.
That was hilarious. But like they all try to get along after like a while because certain gnomes are getting.
Certain gnomes? How many damn gnomes are there?
It's like a Smurf village.
But I liked it. It's like who was it? James McAvoy and Emily Blunt's characters fall in love, and that's where it's at. I don't know if I should, but it was good.
Okay, clearly Kevin is, you know, trying to suppress some kind of homicidal instinct here, so let
he wants to kill the gnomes. Do you want to kill the gnomes? Is that it?
No, that's just murder. I didn't see it, actually, but I didn't want to watch it because it had gnomes, and there was an ad where a guy was wearing a little freaking old man was wearing a like a bikini bottom all tied up around his shoulders.
Ready for summer, man. Come on.
I cut him some slacks. Stay away from this movie. All right. I'm doing my best.
I have to agree with Kevin 100%.
Hysterical.
I didn't laugh once. I thought it was boring. I've seen this done. Those stupid Elton John songs are getting on my nerves.
Oh,
look, another scene. Oh, look, we just happen to have the producer of the movie's music. And it fits perfectly with it.
Oh, get over yourself. It was cute.
Don't go
cute.
In my
baby, if you're five.
No, I'm not five. But I liked it.
I liked it. Can I have a lollipop now, Daddy?
Oh.
So what, did they play Tiny Dancer over the closing credits?
No, I think it was something else.
Nah.
Alright, come on, the whole fountain scene?
It was cute!
From the closing
Tiny Dancer. That's exactly what it is. I think that's when they played it, isn't it? The fountain scene.
Remember, I saw it months ago.
This movie sucked.
But I liked it.
Yeah, you went on your top 10 list. You and Bob can hang out at the Hotel for Dogs for Vengeance double feature.
Alright. I was not here when he picked Hotel for Dogs as one of his top movies of the year.
I was.
Ever.
It's number one the whole time.
Okay. Unfortunately, I was here, but for Vengeance. So.
Woo!
Yeah. But, no, Bob and I are going to give it 2 thumbs up.
Yeah, well, who cares?
Everybody else's thumbs are way down.
Oh, you guys.
Suck.
Get that head over the tail.
Cute.
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 Cute. It's not even cute, too.
Yeah, it doesn't make us any good.
Hey.
Okay, what would you make us watch?
Do you know why Thor is the most popular Avenger at the Avengers Mansion?
Why is Thor the most popular Avenger at Thor's
in the shower?
Tell us, Uncle Cal.
Why is he the most popular in the shower?
I don't know.
He's from Asgard.
Oh, wow. That was funny.
Wow, you really did go to an all-boys high school, didn't you?
I better put that in a box and save it for Christmas to have another one.
I think it was on the box for Thor's Tales of Asgard. Directed by Sam Liu, stars the voice of Rick Gomez, Matthew Wolf, Tara Strong, Alabaster Abel, Paul Dobson, Brett Chapman, Chris Britton, Kathy Wesseluck, and a bunch of other people I do not know.
Nobody cares.
Exactly.
Karen, what did you think of this one?
Karen didn't see it.
Thank you, Kevin.
Bob did.
I did.
Oh.
Why don't you go from there?
Come on.
Okay.
Is it better than
Nomi? No, of
course.
No, well, it was just as good. Thor Tales of Asgard.
Well,
a different way. It was good. You wanted it. I give. Okay. It was just like another, it was him as a young Thor, and then just starting out, but like.
Oh, is it now? A young Thor.
He was hardly even hurting at that point.
Oh, God. That was Thor. That was about to become Thor. Anyway.
Wow, I wish I could have descriptive, like a descriptive pack. Oh, man, that's terrible.
You're sorely mistaken.
I think he thought of screenshot.
Wow, this
oh,
is
here we go.
Oh, Father.
Cal, what did you think?
I thought it was sufferable.
No, it was sufferable.
I thought it was okay. It was okay. It wasn't great. It was like Marvel animation
stuff. Oh, hey,
it was not great, but the story was okay.
Oh.
The characters had a little bit of that personality that they have in the comics. It was okay.
But didn't it show, like, the young Thor? Thor? Because the movie was made, it shows
young
like
Thor?
How he got, huh?
Young Thor.
I'm going to be Thor. It showed why he feels he's so high on himself in the movie. I guess because the young Thor was just it was a continuation from that. Although he started off as the young Thor, and he was so high on himself, or like.
So what you're saying is that this movie isn't a Thoring success.
Oh.
I don't understand what he's saying. Sorry.
I just felt this movie was like a constipation movement that took way too long to get to the finish.
Did you like what was that movie?
The acting sucked.
It was like voice animated. How could it suck?
The voice acting was very plain.
Except for the Warriors
the
3. The Warriors 3.
We're good. You know, I give them full credit for the Warriors 3. But again, they just beat that dead horse with their bad stories continuously. After the third time, I'm kind of like, okay,
I'll be honest,
I got it.
I never liked the Tales of Asgard as a kid.
Nobody
they
did.
They were awful, pretentious. Emotions.
That's why there was one issue of it.
Well, there was tons of it. It was a back issue, backup story of Thor for years.
Yeah, but they had the one issue.
Actually made Kirby interested in Thor in the first place.
Oh, that's good.
Kirby kind of abandoned.
Moving on, I'm done with this. This thing sucked.
Well, we're Thor.
I'm moving on.
You gotta do that laugh into the mic.
Hey, Bob. Do you know what time it is, Bob?
What time is it?
It's time.
Oh my god, he's turning.
I guess we're not opening the vault tonight. Or are we? Kevin.
Oh my god, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry.
We'll get that edited. Not.
What, you mean he's not going to have a Thor throw
out? Probably not. How was Arthur, Kevin?
Arthur, the original Arthur, is directed by Steve Gordon and it stars Dudley Moore, John. And Liza Minnelli. It's okay. I, you know, it's all Dudley Moore. It's all his personality. And in fact, I didn't realize that Dudley Moore wasn't a drunk. Given that Arthur was so popular in the 70s, that's what I thought he was. He was just a drunk. And there's a lot of that character in 10.
Bo
Derek. Yeah, he basically plays a drunk. Wandering around and making stupid mistakes.
He does that in Foul Play as well.
Yep. There's a little bit of that in
you. Have you seen Foul Play, Simon? Write it down, Bob!
Go on.
There's a little bit of that in the original Bedazzled.
I
think he was relatively sober for that film.
Bedazzled's kind of dull, though. Enjoyable, but dull.
Oh, I like Bedazzled.
I know you liked it a lot more than I did.
The original version of Peter Cook?
Of course.
No, I'm talking about the remake with
Batman. Brandon Fraser. He's so good.
And Furry Vengeance.
Yeah, I think he is furry. Furry all over.
Furry Vengeance.
It was so funny when that skunk laughed at him and rode a rock at him and
I love the scene when he turned around and there were three skunks in the back. And they...
Oh,
and you with Tori.
Oh, my little star with a C? And you just a party? Oh, my God!
Just trying to get him.
He's like that gopher in the Candy Jack movie. So funny!
Okay, we are not medicated during this episode. Oh.
There must have been something in the
pizza. Oh.
Oh. Wow. Roofies.
You never know. It's the people I bought it from.
Yeah.
So back to Arthur. Did you like this?
Oh.
You thought it was okay?
I thought it was okay.
Dad, I know you've seen this about five times probably.
Oh, yes.
You
but a lot of this movie is the fact, you know, it's a product of its time and place. I mean, Dudley Moore is charming. Like, that's how he gets away with basically being what would otherwise be a completely unsympathetic character, a rich drunk. And, of course, John Gielgud, who very, very deservedly won the Best Supporting Actor for his role as the... Well, you up there, buddy? All right, but to return to John Gielgud... I mean, if you go back to his performance, it is a template for every sarcastic sidekick that has come since in movies. Like, possibly, the most famous line is the one where Arthur is sitting in a chair and announces, I think I'll have a bath. That's John Gielgud. I'll vote for media. I mean, in 1981, that was a kind of sarcastic humor you just didn't see a lot of in movies. And Liza Minnelli. Poor Liza. She gets a lot of flack, but this was made at the end of her golden period, and she is charming and funny and wacky and quirky, and you actually believe why Arthur would choose to be with a girl who's essentially a shoplifter rather than run off with the girl he's arranged to marry. Read.
He said Liza Minnelli had a golden period.
Hey, where are you with? I do not want to talk about Picasso's blue or pink period?
No.
So I was all right then.
Okay, I will combine it. I thought
ladies and gentlemen, I date this person.
Occasionally.
Let's move on to Arthur
2. I haven't pretty
sure. Actually, you're on the rock.
I need to make. Can I talk about Arthur Dab to look at with you?
Yes.
Oh, thanks, Dab. That's nice of you. I can trust your mic.
I'm having a good cold.
I just want to say, I didn't find this
movie. I'm having a silver apostrophe later.
I didn't find this movie funny. I don't know what I was supposed to do. I got the humor. I thought John Gielgud was excellent. But other than that, I just thought it was the same routine over and over and over again, except for the scene with the moose. I thought the moose scene, actually, I laughed. Other than that, I thought it was kind of dull.
I watched it last night, having not seen it since, I guess it was a brand
new. Did you watch it between the moon and New York City?
I did. I could see the moon at the back window.
And there's nothing we can do.
God help us. Oh.
Nothing between the moon and me.
That's the movie. I found it very dated watching it now.
Dated?
I found it very dated.
That song is dated. Should have been scrapped. Great Marvin Hamlisch. Thanks, Marvin. Another classic for AM radio forever.
Yes. And elevators. Yeah, the movie doesn't work for me. Even John Gielgud, it was not funny.
But he was good. He saved the movie.
He saved the movie, but still, watching it now, I'm impressed.
There's a lot of John Gielgud's butler character in the Batman animated series, Alfred.
Absolutely, there is.
A lot of dry humor.
I like it, though. I like the Batman.
Dealing with an eccentric.
Bob, do you have anything to add from the run? Okay, Arthur 2.
Arthur 2 was on the rocks. Debbie?
The poster, I recall, had Dudley Moore and Liza Minnelli with holding up the top hat and a sign that said, Brother, can you spare $750 million? So basically, all this movie is the characters as we previously met them are suddenly broke. And we have to follow their heartwarming struggle to get it all back. And the only real thing this movie had going for it was that John Gielgud, whose character had died in the first Arthur, came back as a ghost, which I thought was a nice touch. Well, come on, a drunken hallucination has got to be one of the more, shall we say, innovative ways of bringing back a character.
I think someone wants to show you something there.
I'm just showing her there the two ghosts that she was talking about.
There's a reason why there was no Arthur 3.
Yeah.
And that was Arthur 3.
Oh, Arthur 2 sucked.
First movie. Arthur bored me so much I didn't want to see part
of it. Oh, I sat...
You have to look at Arthur and the Oh God trilogy as the 70s movies. They were the pinnacle of comedy, that and 10 and a couple other things. But best left forgotten and not remade.
Or remade and changed and modernized. Yeah. But, like Simon said, who wants to go see a movie that is... and verbatim. Like, the remake of True Grit was very verbatim to the original, but it still worked for me. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to see an Arthur verbatim. There's just no point.
No. There's no point to Arthur 2. The whole movie's about them adopting a baby and the revenge of the girl for number one to get back at her girl's father, who buys out Arthur's family, they go to 40-something... And he buys out the foreign investors, so he owns Arthur's company and gives him all the money. So he basically wants to make Arthur's life miserable. So Arthur says, okay, we want to adopt a baby. Kathy Bates tells me to stop drinking and get a job.
Kathy Bates is in this movie?
Kathy Bates plays a social worker. Very early Kathy Bates. She plays a social worker. And basically when Arthur, okay, I'm going to go get a job at the butcher shop. Her dad buys the butcher shop. Okay, I'm going to go do this. Again, same thing happened. And since Arthur's never had a job, they seem kind of fumbling and everything, but of course they take pity on him and give him a job.
Drunk?
No, he has to sober up so they can adopt the kid.
Right.
And then, of course, him and Liza Minnelli have a big fight and this and that and the falling out. And Arthur goes to find stuff on the guy, her chick's dad to get out of it. And that's really the movie. And who cares? The movie sucked. Mm. Awful, awful, awful movie. And I didn't care. I was getting to the point going, we just going to play the stupid song again? We thought it might have been the music for me. This movie's awful. There's a reason why Arthur 3 was made, because this is awful. Liza Minnelli is a horrible actress. Yeah. I didn't like her in Arthur 1, and this just shows. The script is so weak.
I don't think I've liked her in anything, to be completely honest.
I mean, Arthur only gets sober when he becomes pretty much a homeless guy and sees John Gielgud in his dreams and convinces him to become sober, really, because of delusions.
Yeah.
Ah, okay, sure. Sock, skip.
All right.
Okay, that pretty much sums up my two, I guess. See the first one, not the second.
Skip them all.
Skip them all. Watch, oh God.
All right, let's go to some good movies. Here's a classic, Psycho, directed by Alfred Hitchcock. Stars Anthony Perkins, Vera Miles, Janet Leigh. Alfred Hitchcock in the cameo.
Janet Leigh. Running a slip then?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
And it is interesting that we're looking at this movie right after talking about Arthur, a movie that was the subject of an unnecessary remake. Because Psycho was also the subject of an unnecessary remake.
Shot for shot. Gus Van Sant, same movie, changed the ending.
And yet... You know, I can't remember a thing about the remake of Psycho, except that it was in color.
It's unnecessary to remake Hitchcock. It's really sacrilegious. It's wrong. It should never be done.
I agree.
So now we come to...
Any color.
Indeed. But Psycho, 1960 masterpiece that followed a time when Hitchcock was making a lot of color films, very glossy, high production values, movies like To Catch a Thief, Rear Window, The Man Who Knew Too Much, the second version. There were just a lot of, expensive, glossy, Technicolor movies. And then all of a sudden, he does a 180 and makes this spooky, weird little movie on a dime. Using his television show's crew, shooting in cheap black and white, and not even using full orchestra to do the music. The music is simply the string section of the orchestra.
Bernard Herrmann, right?
Yes.
Yeah, as always. What did it care?
Watching this movie when I was younger, obviously it has a bigger effect on it.
on the viewer. And, you know, even when I was young, it was a movie that got talked about and how scary it was. And, I mean, the shower scene is you know, very historically well-known. You know, watching it today and obviously knowing what's going to happen takes away, you know, all of your suspense factors. But it's a little dated in that respect, but what I loved about this movie is how it's shot, and, you know, the quirkiness of Norman Bates is just, which I didn't really get, you know, in the remake. I don't think that he was quite as quirky, he was just strange. But
yes.
He was very, you know, Norman Bates by Anthony Perkins, that was quirky.
Mm-hmm. Well, what else I think is fascinating about this movie is just how very strange it is, considering the fact it was made in 1960. You've got, like, the first time you see the leading man and the leading or who we think are the leading man and the leading lady, you see Janet Leigh in her lingerie in a hotel room at lunchtime with her boyfriend, and it is very clear what they have just been up to. Afternoon Delight, which in 1960, when the production code still had teeth, it's really amazing that Hitchcock got away with that.
Skyrockets in the light.
I know that song.
Afternoon Delight.
Afternoon Delight.
Welcome to Extra Features, the sing-along podcast. CD provided with that track three.
And we haven't even gotten past the opening 3 minutes yet.
No, we haven't.
No. This is an interesting movie because Janet Leigh, our leading lady, is in love with a divorced man, and his alimony payments mean he can't afford to marry her and make an honest woman of her.
Bob, you just watched it yourself?
Actually, I just watched it the other day. I never watched it when, like, years ago, but it was fresh. Like, what was I trying?
Fresh
meat. No, I know the background of it. I know the shower scene is famous. The house is famous, but I never saw the entire movie up until just recently. So, and for me, it was like fresh, and it was great. Well, I mean, I can go out and buy it myself now because I've seen the whole movie. That's a great movie. What?
Just saw this, like, yesterday?
Yes.
Wow.
Okay, Mr. Far and Away. Have you seen Far
You've
and Away?
You've never seen Psycho in all the years
No.
I've been alive?
No. All the years I've been alive?
Yes, you've been alive older than... You're here longer than the rest of us.
I'm here longer. Well, actually, you've been here longer than the rest of us. Here.
No, I've been here in
here.
Specific
apartments. Yes, but I've been here on this planet longer than the rest. But I had no interest in these movies up until, like, I say, a couple of years ago. And now I watch the extras, and you have to look for all the Alfred Hitchcock cameos. And I'm going, okay, I found this. I see this. And
that's the only interesting thing.
No, the whole movie as a whole, it was really good.
Where is Hitchcock in this one? I can't really remember now.
He's at the very beginning. You see him outside the office where Janet Leigh works. He's wearing a white cowboy hat. It's one of those ones where he just gets the cameo out of the way fast.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to interfere with the story.
Well, he said that was planned, like get it out of the way.
Very early on.
Very early on.
Well, because, I think it's because, originally he started doing the cameos because it was just a quick, you know, if they needed an extra person just to, you know, be on set. It was just a cheap way to do it. And then by the 30s, people were so used to watching for the cameos that increasingly he just had to get them out of the way fast because people weren't paying attention to the movie. They were paying attention to when he was going to show up.
Yeah. I think there's a couple things. I mean, this movie's fantastic. Everybody knows that. I like the way Hitchcock films this. I find he changes shots a lot, and especially when we go into the house. I find he really changes his film style. And I think this is probably one of my favorite scenes in all the movies, when Martin Blossom's investigating, he comes up the stairs.
And then there's shot from above.
And out of nowhere, this knife comes, shoots him backwards coming down the stairs, which I've never seen done again, or done because I know it's Hitchcock now as soon as I saw it. And that quite impressed me. And I also read, I did some more research, so I was just rewatching this, and it said they asked at the time not to put people in the movie. Like, so if you went to see this movie late, you couldn't get in.
Yeah.
You had to wait. I thought that was fascinating.
That was in the extra features in the disc.
Yes, and they wanted to take that away from them so people didn't realize Janet Leigh was a whole movie. But I liked that in this movie. I like Marston Boston doing the work. And I really like the town's detective, the police chief. I thought he was a well-character actor.
They wanted to keep the secret of the movie intact as well.
Which I love. I think
it's Norman Bates' mother was.
Yes.
I really enjoyed this movie. It is a classic. I like the fact it's in black and white.
Works.
Which is important. It makes for a great film.
I think also, you know, again, in doing a lot of reading about the movie, and Hitchcock in general is—he's very precise. He wants not just how it's shot to be, you know, very precise, or you know, when he was doing the scenes with all the taxidermy and things like that, which was really well done. But an interesting sidebar is he's very in tune to the sound in the movie.
Yes.
And in the shower scene, to I guess.
And shower rings pulling back.
Yeah.
And to authenticate the sound of the stabbing.
Melon.
Used watermelon. But having already gone through almost every other kind of melon on the planet, they, you know, the sound of Janet Leigh being stabbed is actually a watermelon being chopped.
I just want to know if anybody's seen the sequels. There are two sequels, I think.
I have not seen them.
I think I've seen Psycho 2. I mean, it's decades later, and
when he comes out of the mental hospital,
yeah.
He gets released, and the killing starts.
He's actually a bit of the hero of the piece because he's not necessarily killing people.
People are
dying in the Bates motel, and it's revenge. It's Janet Leigh's family. I think that are out for revenge.
I don't know. It's a direct video.
I'm crazy again.
Number two is in the theaters. I do know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Three was as well.
I do remember two in the theaters. And I think what also is, you know, you can question whether Hitchcock needs a sequel. Like I said, I don't like it being remade. A sequel, you know, it's debatable. And again, it depends on how well it's done.
Yeah, I've never seen it,
well,
so I didn't even know about it until recently, so
what?
I will investigate it.
The more I think about Psycho, the more I'm amazed at the things they got away with. Like the fact that when Janet Leigh goes into the motel room, Norman Bates spies on her as she's getting undressed. I mean, that is deeply creepy for 1960. I can't imagine how strange that must have looked to have the peak in Thomism.
That's, I think he was a bit inspired by the actual movie, Peak in Tom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which was predated by, I think, in the same year. You know?
Yes.
It was.
Yeah.
Michael Powell.
Yeah,
Powell and Pressburger. That's the movie that finished Michael Powell's directing career. That movie just freaked people in Britain out so badly. But yet, Hitchcock, who makes just this equally shocking movie. Like, we're talking about, like, the first 45 minutes of the movie, we follow Marion. It is Marion's movie. And then she is killed, and almost and completely seamlessly, it becomes Norman's movie. We don't even notice the switch. It's incredible.
I'm with you 100%. It's just an excellent movie. You should go
and
see it.
And I think it's one of the earlier movies where schizophrenia was actually brought out as his, you know, reasoning.
I still think that was the weakest part of the movie was the psychiatrist's speech. I think they were forced to add that in to get the movie released just because... I mean, we're talking about a guy who keeps the mummified body of his mother in the cellar of his house and dresses up in drag to commit murders.
He likes to mark himself, too. He thinks he's his mother.
But he thinks he's his mother. So
right.
It's not that he's really dressing up.
Yeah.
He thinks he's her.
Yes. But this is just such a deeply, deeply strange movie. And he was wonderful, but it's all the more wonderful when you realize just how unique it really is.
Well, for that time period, clearly.
Well, speaking of unique movies,
I'm not even gonna hurt this guy.
Are you gonna watch? Are we getting to Red Shoes? So.
Yeah, this is it, man.
Okay,
Red Shoes. Powell and Pressburger, nice to meet him, actually.
Yeah, so it's trying to.
Stars Anton Walbrook, Marius Goring, Moira Shearer, and Gene Shorty. It's a classic example of British filmmaking in the 1950s. And we would like to kick this.
I think Kevin should, because Kevin will go on for an hour.
Oh,
that's true.
It's true.
Do you want to start it off? Classic. I love this film because of the color more than anything else. The use of color in this film is amazing.
I have to disagree with you.
Really?
The color is phenomenal. But that's not what kept the music. The soundtrack to this, and this is seamless. This is a 5-star on my top 20 movies I've ever seen.
Martin Scorsese's favorite movie.
Let's see, the other director, he'll come back to me. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Brian De Palma. It's one of Brian De Palma's favorite movies.
Although De Palma must just love Hitchcock. I mean, every De Palma film is an ode to Hitchcock.
So, continue.
I like it quite a lot. The acting is great. The scenes, the dance sequence within the film, when she gets the red shoes, the whole
opera. Oh, my God.
It's
breathtaking. This is a must-own movie for me. I had to borrow a copy. I will buy one. If this comes out on Blu-ray, this will be my first purchase.
It's out on Blu-ray.
It is, and I'm going to buy this.
It's
this movie,
it's on the shelf.
Then I will go pick up a copy. This movie is phenomenal. Yeah?
Well, there are two scenes I'm going to mention because they're just so incredible. One is the scene where you see Vicky, the red-headed ballerina, played by Moira Shearer, dancing as her husband, who's played by Marius Goring, is conducting the orchestra as she dances. And it's incredible because they superimpose waves crashing on a beach. And it's such a beautiful way of describing like this pull that's almost like a force of nature that pulls them together. And I think it's the other beautiful, beautiful scene in this movie was the actual scene in the Ballet of the Red Shoes, which does not actually have anything to do with the rest of the movie plot-wise. It's just a beautiful 15-minute ballet that's just there for the sake of beauty. It's gorgeous. But it's the scene where she actually leaps into the red shoes and they strap up by themselves. Gorgeous. And when you look at the movie as a whole, Vicky is really trapped in the red shoes. She loves the ballet so much, she literally cannot live without it. If she stops dancing, she dies. And, in fact, that is what happens. I mean, it's like, I think actually the love triangle was probably the weakest aspect of the movie. Although I love Anton Walbrook. He is freaky.
After everything you've said, but I'm surprised you didn't touch on, you did touch on the end of the film. That's why I want to cross over. Did you not remind you of Vertigo at the end of this film? Like, I want to know what Hitchcock thought of this film, because I want to do some more research to see if he's seen this.
Well, I'm sure he must have. But the thing that's interesting about the end of the movie is that
it's Vertigo.
But at the end of the movie, it's interesting because Vertigo, where Vertigo starts to get really interesting, is after the supposed death of Madeline. This movie ends with the death.
I think Hitchcock took parts of Vertigo from
the
film.
Oh, for sure.
There's no doubt about it.
The obsessive quality that Anton Walbrook has in ballet impresario, for sure.
Is James Stewart in Vertigo.
Because at the beginning of this movie, the previous star ballerina leaves because she wants to get married. She wants to have a full life. You know, she says, I love the dance, but there's other things too.
But, Anton Walbrook
is playing the impresario.
Yeah, I know. It's telling her, you can't. You must dance the red shoes. And I love when he says that line.
Yes.
And you will never perform the red shoes again. And that's crushing to me as a viewer. Because I want her to dance the red shoes again.
Yes.
And that hurt me. That's the part that killed me in this movie. Because I was living through her the red shoes ballet. They convinced me that this, I was her. And I need to be her. And I need to dance in those shoes with her. I absolutely was consumed by this movie.
And what's interesting is that neither of the male characters is willing to allow the heroine to compromise.
No, and they both try to pull her in both different ways.
Anton Walbrook says, you know, you must dance. You cannot, like, it's almost like when you dance, it's almost like a priesthood. You cannot have anything else in your life but the dance. And Marius Goring, who is her conductor husband, is all like, no, you're going to be my wife. And neither of them is, and it doesn't occur to either of them that she can do both.
And I love the end of the film, because the whole film is about her putting on the red shoes.
Yes.
It's exactly, that's the whole movie. When she dies, they take the red shoes off.
It's the last scene.
And that just blew me away. If you have not seen this film, I know we've discussed all of it, you have to see this.
Because this movie is not really about the plot. This movie is about the experience of the film.
Where does this rank? Like this, I'm saying it would break my probably top 10. I only heard
of... Well, this is one of the all-time greats.
I think this movie is phenomenal. I just want to tell you guys a laugh. I mean, only knew about this movie from reading Entertainment Weekly. It said, if you like Black Swan, you should see Red Shoes.
Because,
and I never heard of it.
And because there's the same kind
of... You've never heard of Red Shoes?
I've never heard of the Red Shoes.
Wow.
So...
I'm silent on this because I've never seen the movie, but I'm surprised, again, that you had never heard of it, knowing, you know, your background.
I do miss things, but I'm fascinated by it. I want to watch this again, and I want my daughter to be old enough to appreciate this movie, because I will watch this movie forever. I can't wait to watch it again. And anybody here knows how often I rewatch movies.
Not often.
But the other thing that's amazing about this movie is the way that, like, the way that they allow themselves to step away from strict narrative, because the Ballet of the Red Shoes is totally important to understanding the characters, but it doesn't necessarily have anything to do, like, it's not like, say, a musical in the sense that, like, say, West Side Story is, where the characters sing and dance to express their feelings, and it progresses the plot. Like, this is like the movie, like, the conventional narrative stops, there's this beautiful dance, and it reflects what's been going on and what's going to come up, what's going to happen, but it's not like Vicky starts to sing about her troubles, or it's not like the ballet is about Vicky being torn between the impresario and her husband, as it might be in a Hollywood musical. It's like a pure art piece.
I agree with you. I love the way this movie starts. It starts off real happy-go-lucky. You see them from the beginning to the end. And as the film enriches you and you enrich with that, it drags you deeper and deeper and deeper. And you don't know who to like. Because I don't know if you ever like anybody in this movie. Because it's hard. Because it's such good acting, the story. So, because you don't really like the dancer. Like, I just wanted to watch her dance again. Mm-hmm. She was so amazing. And the conductor, I felt for him. I felt for everybody. I didn't know who to like because I didn't have a villain. That was my biggest problem. The villain to me was the red shoes.
Yeah.
That is what convinced me. It goes from this happy movie to convince you the red shoes are evil, which fascinated me. But you need her to wear the red shoes to appreciate the dance. Kevin?
I just want to say, you talked about what a topless, I looked at the AFI topless, and of course it's not in there because it's not an American film.
Yes.
But the British film industry actually ranks it ninth. And they're top 100.
Well, what's ahead of it? Let's go, just go.
Interesting quickly. Enough, The Third Man is number one.
Fair enough.
I completely agree.
I 100% best.
Number two is a film that I have not seen, but I like his Brief Encounter.
I've seen
David Lee. Number three is Lawrence of Arabia,
which I'm not a big fan of. It's not for me. But I get why it's on there. It's beautiful to look at.
39 Steps.
Good movie.
Number four.
Awesome.
Number five is Great Expectations, another David Lean movie. They love David Lean when they talk about it. Kind Hearts and Coronets.
Oh, that's hysterical.
A Shot and Arrow in here. She fell to Earth in Berkeley Square.
Cast, a film I've not seen. Another one, Ken Loach is at the Cast. It's just coming out in the Criterion Collection soon. Don't Look Now by Nicholas Roeg. And then number nine is The Red Shoes.
And number ten?
Number 10, surprisingly, is Trainspotting.
Oh,
wow!
Really? I was never a big Trainspotting fan.
And then Birds on the River Kwai.
Is number one.
Is that a British film? It's an American film.
It's a British film.
I don't know.
It features an American actor as a Canadian.
John Wayne was Canadian.
John Wayne is not a British film.
What am I thinking of?
It's William Holden.
Oh, okay. Wrong movie.
Bob, did you see The Red Shoes? Oh, I thought you did
it.
No.
Oh,
okay.
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
Anybody else? Right. So we're good?
There was just one other thing I was going to say before we leave this movie, and that is Moira Shearer is a real dancer. And after all the controversy over Natalie Portman, like, using a dance double for Black Swan, like whenever you see Moira Sheridan, it's her. It's
oh, there's no doubt
her.
About it. It's her. They couldn't. They don't have the technology to separate. Because the camera's on her all the time.
They couldn't rebuild her.
And she is a phenomenal dancer. It's quite impressive. Well, I give this a must-see, must-buy in my top 20 for sure.
What movie could follow the wrenches?
Is there another movie? Yeah. Oh, okay. I don't know what that movie does.
Episode 74.
I'm Simon.
I'm Wendy. You're Peter Pan.
Peter Pan. I'm Marvin.
The Wonder Dog.
Oh, I'm Dad.
And I'm Harry Potter. I'm telling you, if Dobby makes it, Harry Potter will see it.
Creature hates it.